The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
Well, on the earth.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents.
We love the earth.
Normal Show Live. Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Normal Show Live. It's Thursday, March 25th, 2010, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Join us for the next 60 minutes of news, talk, information, interviews, music, comedy, and more by, for, and about the cannabis community. It's never been a better time to get involved with marijuana law reform. And we here at Normal are welcoming you to the reform movement. Jump on the bandwagon. Get involved with your own liberation. And joining me to my left, our engineer, the maestro, Ganja John.
Hey, everybody. How are you doing today?
John was showing pictures from various moments in his life. And what was that character, that cartoon picture?
That was Zangief from Street Fighter 2. About 8 months ago, you know, I was living at home, you know, living with just me and my wife, and we didn't really do anything. I just waited around to get to dialysis, so I thought, screw it, I'm going to shave my head to a mohawk.
Why not?
It worked out good for me.
All right. And joining us in our virtual studio in Astoria, Oregon, my good friend and half-half sister, Cannabis Carrie.
How are you guys doing today?
We are doing fantastic. We're glad to hear from you. How are things up in the beautiful Astoria area?
Pretty good, pretty good. I think maybe your mic isn't on. You sound like you're coming through John's mic.
Oh, no. Well, John, talk for a second, and I'll fix my mic.
It sounds like you're okay.
Oh, boy.
Okay, that sounds much better.
Yeah, that's a little better. Technical problems.
Let's see if that helped any. Does that give me a little more voice
live.
There, Carrie?
That sounds pretty good to me. I don't know about the people out there, but that sounds good to me.
We're still working out some of the new equipment here in the studio, and we want to thank Rola J out there in the chat room also, who's sending us a compressor limiter and some vocal effects, which should be very, very useful for the show. We'll probably have those by the weekend. We'll get them all set up. Now, Carrie...
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
go ahead.
We'll have the Darth Vader voice back and everything. Now, Cannabis Carrie joins us right after our first break to give us our hemp headlines from CannabisFantastic.com. So what's in the news today?
Well, we have a hemp headline from some world cannabis news. We're going to go over to Europe and look at a disturbing story coming out of Europe. We're also going to look at the District of Columbia and how they are planning to implement their 12-year-old medical marijuana law. And we're also going to go to the state of Michigan, where it seems like law enforcement just isn't getting the message.
Oh, yeah. How long is it going to take before they finally get the message from the American people that we want to re-legalize cannabis? Well, we'll keep pushing, and we will get this changed. This year, we've got already California. They just certified that they're going to be voting for marijuana legalization this November. South Dakota turned in its signatures to get a medical marijuana initiative
active on the ballot. And joining us later on in our show, at the end of the show, Madeline Martinez from Oregon Normal and the world-famous Cannabis Cafe will be here with an update on OCTA, the Oregon Cannabis Tax Act, and how it has just passed another hurdle in getting on the ballot in the state of Oregon. Joining us at the bottom of the hour, at 30 after, we are going to speak with Peter Crist from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. He'll be here to tell us why cops say legalize drugs. And also, we've got our daily Toker Tunes that we bring to you at 20 after the hour. John Doe from John Doe Radio will be here with a great tune from Hollis. And previewing tomorrow's show, I just received the screener copy of the new movie Leaves of Grass. This was just reviewed in the recent High Times magazine, starring Edward Norton. The writer-director of this movie, Tim Blake Nelson, will be talking to us tomorrow. We're still working out the contact details, but we're going to have him on the show. John knows all about Tim Blake Nelson. I don't know a whole lot about him, but you can tell me.
What Russ is trying to say is I'm a nerd, and I really, really like Marvel movies, and I can't tell you guys how excited I am because Tim Blake Nelson was in The Incredible Hulk, one of my favorite recent Marvel movies. Also, Edward Norton was in that, and if we didn't have that movie, we wouldn't have Leaves of Grass.
That's right. So Leaves of Grass interview tomorrow, as well as Danny Danko with our Cultivator's Corner. He always joins us on the fourth Friday of the month, so tune in to tomorrow's show. You can ask your cultivation questions live via our chat, and Danny Danko will be here to answer them. All right, folks, we got to take a break, and so when we come back, we will have Carrie with our hemp headlines. Also, if you'd like to get in touch with the show, you can check out our blog at stash.normal.org. You can email me at stash@normal.org. You can follow me on Twitter at Radical Russ. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. This is Normal Show Live.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carrie.
A popular Amsterdam coffee house has been accused of stockpiling far too much cannabis, and the courts have handed down a pricey judgment as punishment. The Checkpoint, a cannabis coffee house on the banks of the Worcestershire River in Terneuzen, a southern town close to the Belgian border, has been fined 10 million euros, or roughly 13.3 million U.S., for breaking the country's rarely enforced drug laws. The Checkpoint coffee house and restaurant has now been closed, but at one time sold cannabis to 3,000 people a day, many of them coming from across the Belgian border to buy cannabis and hash. It had long been accepted by the local authorities, who even put up road signs pointing tourists to the coffee house, and the city also built a parking lot for the shop to help reduce traffic congestion in the town to accommodate coffee house patrons. Many see this case as a sign of the growing effort to rein in drug tourism in the country. The long-ignored limit on how much cannabis a coffee house can have on the premises at any given time is only 18 ounces. When police raided the Checkpoint on 2 different occasions last year, they found over 400 pounds of marijuana. Neighboring countries have recently been more vocal about the Netherlands undermining their own efforts to halt the marijuana drug trade. Conservative prosecutors in other cities along Dutch border towns with Germany, France, and Belgium are looking to yesterday's verdict to see if they have a case for cracking down on coffee shops in their own towns with or without support of the local townsfolk. The Checkpoint's owner, along with 15 of his staff, were convicted of the crimes of breaking drug laws, exporting drugs, and membership of a criminal organization. The owner of a popular coffee shop was sentenced to 4 months in jail along with a hefty fine, and the staff were sentenced to community service. Prosecutors were asking for a $37 million fine. The court said that the fine was lowered due to the police and local authorities' intrusion, allowing the checkpoint coffee house to grow unchecked for so long. The court statement said that the checkpoint could not have expanded as much as it had without collaboration from the municipality of Terneuzen. Though technically illegal, the Netherlands decriminalized the consumption and possession of cannabis in 1976. Under an official tolerance policy.
It's always been kind of an untenable situation there in the Netherlands. You know, everybody famously thinks of the coffee houses, and a lot of people will mistakenly say, well, marijuana's legal. But it's not. Cannabis is not legal in Amsterdam. It's technically not even legal in the coffee houses. The situation there is that the officials have tolerated it. They've realized that if they allow the possession and use and sales of small amounts of cannabis in the coffee shops, that they have less problems with, you know, hard drug use and crime and all the attendant problems of prohibition. However, in tolerating the consumer use of cannabis, they never have actually tolerated the cultivation, production, and large-scale sale and distribution of cannabis. So it's that same, you know, irony, that same paradox that we live under when we start talking about decriminalization laws here in the United States, where we say, yeah, it's a good thing to not lock people up for smoking pot, but if you don't legalize the other side of it, you don't legalize the production side and the distribution side, you still end up with a lot of the problems that you have under prohibition, and you give those black marketeers a bigger audience, a bigger set of consumers that are now no longer afraid of being busted for the decriminalized weed. So it's a small baby step, but some people think that it can actually be harmful in that it increases the revenues and the trade for the black marketeers. Now, in Amsterdam, and I'm sorry, in the Netherlands, this, of course, is also become a problem from, like Carrie mentioned, the concept of drug tourism. People from all throughout Europe flocking to the border towns in the Netherlands in order to get their smoke on. And again, that's an attendant problem of prohibition as well. If all the countries just went ahead and had a tolerant policy like the Netherlands did, there'd be no reason for people to travel to the Netherlands in order to use their cannabis. And this is going to be something we're going to face here in America, too, as California starts to vote on marijuana legalization. What happens when one area of the country or one area of the continent, in the case of Europe, manages to tolerate or even legalize the use of cannabis, and yet all of the states or countries around them have not? What is that going to happen as far as that that dichotomy, that lack of balance between the legal state or country versus the illegal states or countries? It's something that's going to play out over this next election, and we'll keep a close eye on it. We just hope that Amsterdam and the Netherlands, you know, still manage to tolerate the consumer use of marijuana and move forward with actually coming up with sensible regulations for the production and distribution of cannabis as well.
The list of national cities that are debating medical marijuana dispensary regulation has just gotten its biggest player yet, our nation's capital, the District of Columbia. Changes to legislation that would formalize the medical marijuana program in the first city will likely be introduced next week. D.C. Councilmember Phil Mendelson, chairman of the Committee on Public Safety and the Judiciary, has been mum as to what the changes will be, but did say discussions on the number of dispensaries allowed, their location in relation to schools and youth centers, and what ailments might qualify for doctor-recommended medical marijuana have been discussed and will be addressed. The much-discussed home cultivation amendment may be capped at just 2 plants per patient. D.C. voters legalized medical marijuana by voter initiative back in 1998, but Congress has prohibited the implementation of the bill by withholding funding until January of this year. The proposed amendments to the 12-year-old bill are unsettling to medical marijuana advocates that say they want the bill to remain as is with no additional restrictions. But lawmakers like Mendelson say that the intent of the initiative was meant to address patients with only the most serious ailments. Wayne Turner, the co-author of the 1998 D.C. initiative, has come out publicly in favor of the proposed restrictions. In an op-ed piece to the Washington Post, Turner used the "look at California" argument on why D.C. should tighten its rules regarding medical marijuana, asking the council members to head off the abuses that have emerged in California by using a more cautious approach. He also warns the city that Congress retains authority to overturn D.C. legislation at any time and calls it a, quote, grave mistake to unnecessarily provoke further congressional interference by creating a system vulnerable to abuses.
Oh, the what about California argument once again. You know, California's rate of teen marijuana use is like number 32 in the country, whereas the District of Columbia's is probably somewhere up there in the top 10. Just saying, you know, everybody always wants to say, oh my God, there's so much abuse in California. But what is this abuse? What is this abuse people are talking about? What they're talking about is the notion that somebody who's not at death's door might be using cannabis. Right. You heard that in this, in the, what was the name of the guy who was the guy who wrote this bill, Carrie, that wrote the law?
Wayne Turner.
Wayne Turner. That's right. So you hear this in Wayne Turner's opinion here in favor of these restrictions, saying that, you know, medical marijuana was only for the most seriously ill, the most terminally ill. D.C. passed medical marijuana by 69%. It's the highest voter support that we've seen for a medical marijuana initiative. And when this 1998 initiative was passed, the language in the initiative was as free or as open as California's, and in some cases even less restrictive, if you can believe that, than California's law. So the people in D.C. knew what they were voting for. They weren't voting for one of these Tim Pawlenty type only medical marijuana if you're on death's door and you've got cancer and you're chained to a radiator in a basement and smoking it on Tuesday mornings at 4 a.m. with nobody within 1,000 feet of you type of laws. No, they passed a very, very liberal medical marijuana law by 69%. It's clear that the people knew what they were voting for, and yet all of these revisionists want to come along and say, oh, no, 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 the people thought there'd only be 500 patients. The people thought it would only be for terminal conditions. The people thought marijuana would be kept under lock and key and transported in armored trucks. No, that's not what the people thought. They saw what was on the ballot, a very liberal medical marijuana law, and they voted for it. So they're looking at dispensaries, and this would be a good thing for D.C., trying to cap the number and the locations. Again, they're going to bring up this whole got to be 1,000 feet from a school, 1,000 feet from a playground, 1,000 feet from a McDonald's play place, 1,000 feet from concrete. I mean, it's ridiculous how many restrictions they want to put on medical marijuana facilities that have been shown to be safer than banks or liquor stores in California with respect to how much crime goes on around them. And yet it's the dispensaries they want to cut down on. And this notion that they're going to allow patients only 2 plants. I love it when these legislators who have no idea, no concept of agriculture or gardening, especially indoor gardening, which is a lot more difficult. When these types of people say, oh, well, you only need 2 plants, they never take into account the fact that things like spider mites happen. We have bad crops. We have molds. All these things can happen. And 2 plants does not give the patients enough of the plants to be able to guard against those possibilities.
Michigan's law enforcement is still unclear about the state's medical marijuana law 2 years after it was enacted. The Detroit Free Press is reporting patients fear arrest from police that are unsure of who can legally possess cannabis. There have been several instances of police arresting patients, confiscating their marijuana, and conducting improper search and seizures. According to the ACLU of Michigan, police across the state are either confused or resisting compliance with the medical marijuana law. Roseville Deputy Chief James Berlin has admitted mistakes have been made and was quoted as saying, "We may spend 3 weeks investigating and then bust in and traumatize people only to find out they're legal." Richard Brace from Hazel Park was one such victim. The 66-year-old was babysitting his 7-year-old granddaughter last month when he heard yelling outside. The police began shouting and banging on his door, and just as he was opening it, they shoved a battering ram through the door, shattering it all over the living room floor and getting glass on his frightened granddaughter. Brace was handcuffed and questioned, and he hadn't yet received the state's card approving him for medical marijuana that he had applied for back on January 9th. After showing the police all the copies of his paperwork, the police let him go without arresting him. All across the state, medical marijuana patients have been waiting months for the state's registry to catch up with their backlog and issue the identification cards that prove they can legally possess marijuana. According to the Department of Community Health that issues the cards, 21,000 Michiganders have applied to be approved for the program. According to the state's website, a copy of your application can serve as a valid registry identification if the actual card isn't available after 20 days. The Roseville deputy chief explained that if they don't have their card and they are in possession of marijuana, they are going to jail. And if they applied for their card, quote, "We'll let the judge decide if a law was broken," unquote. As for Mr. Brace, whose front door was smashed by the police, they let him keep the half an ounce of cannabis he showed them that he had, took a small amount he had in his basement without explanation, and left the retired optical supply salesman, who suffers from spinal stenosis, to do a late-night repair job on his front door and calm himself and his 7-year-old granddaughter after the ordeal.
Oh, what a shocking story. I got to keep it short. I'm running out of time. But let me tell you, there's no confusion over the law. They're resisting the law. They don't like the idea that they can't just lock up everybody they find with cannabis or a cannabis plant. It happened in Oregon. We got this, all the stories from all the different counties here that like to think of the medical marijuana law as advice rather than the law. It's time for Michigan police to uphold the law. And if they need some training on understanding the law, I'm sure our normal chapters up there would be glad to throw them a seminar. That special time. It's 20 after the hour. We got to take a short break. Thanks for joining us here at Normal Show Live. We'll be right back with your daily Toker tunes. Stick around.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Law420.com.
Hello, I'm Russ Belville, Outreach Coordinator for Normal. In my job, I read literally hundreds of headlines each month involving nonviolent, productive citizens whose lives are ripped apart by a marijuana or drug arrest. Many citizens could avoid arrest by refusing police searches and remaining silent, but police are well-trained to confuse and intimidate. That's why you have a right to speak to an attorney before answering any police questions. I hope you never need to exercise that right, but if you do, make your first call to the law offices of John C. Lucy IV. John Lucy is an accomplished criminal defense attorney with expertise in Oregon's medical marijuana law. John Lucy understands and respects cannabis and drug consumers of all backgrounds. Call John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit in downtown Portland. Address available at law420.com. That's John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit law420.com today.
Want more than just your Normal Show Live? Get your daily fix of marijuana news and interviews on the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the weekday podcast available on iTunes and at stash.normal.org.
Welcome back, everyone. 23 after the hour. Coming up a little bit later, we've got Leap's Peter Crist will be here to talk about why cops say legalize drugs. And in the studio, Madeline Martinez on Okta. Pop Pass Records. It's time for your daily Toker tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we bring you tunes for Groovin' Thursday, our salute to all the dopest beats and killer rhymes that we find in the best of rap, hip-hop, soul, R&B, and funk. Brought to you by the John Doe Radio Show, accurate and informative marijuana reform news and entertainment. Available on the THC Media Network and johndoeradio.com. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now, here's some great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
John Doe Radio.
John Doe from John Doe Radio with your Groovin' Thursday tune on Normal Show Live. I grew up listening to hip-hop and rap, and then around my junior year in high school, I started listening to bands like Rage Against the Machine, Tool, Led Zeppelin, all the classics. There's still that swagger spot in my heart for hip-hop and rap. This tune, one of my favorites, Donnie Cross, Lace Leno, Big Hollis, song's called Say It Ain't True. You heard it here on Normal Show Live. I'm John Doe. See ya.
Okay, man, I'm the realest nigga that you ever seen. A1, Yola, you can wave me on the beam. Yeah. And bet I got a team, and bet they just like me.
Bet they ride new shit.
Bet they got 100 G's.
They all got 100 G's.
I say they
just like me.
We get it on the
nightmare.
Jeans and a white
tee.
Pushing that
ice cream.
Y'all pushing that
ice cream.
Stage in a foreigner. Ready for the high speed. Now don't you just like me? Heels get me hyphen. I smoke, throw and sip. Lean on the low. Moving at a snail's pace. Riding to that space age. Sipping on the ace of spades. Lil' mama hugging me. Rubbing on my dick. Ear ring and a titty. Tongue and a clit. She saying that she like me. And I like it too. I'm a boss in this shit. Nigga say it ain't true. Say it ain't true.
Come on, nigga. Ain't no need. I think the bangs and the cheese. Say it ain't true. Come on, bitch. I know the deal. You get wild off a pill. Say it ain't true.
What's up? What's up? What's up? What's up?
Block, I done been different corner. I done froze up July, turned December to a zona. These pills, purple syrup, got me halfway in a coma. With this bad bitch riding me like I'm a rented Tacoma. See, we hungry and we greedy, got to eat more. Booking flights just to holler at our people. I'm selling high, but I bought it for the cheap dough. Stacking paper like I work at Office Depot. Apply the pressure, grip the grain. On the highway in the rain. Hood rich, but legally I'm the same. Pocket full of money, still robbing niggas for chains. No love for a lame, no pity for a sucker. Daily inflicting pain on a bitch and a buster. It's the west side gangster with the south side hustler. Mashing, dashing, and smashing on the broke motherfucker. Motherfucker.
Come on, nigga, ain't no need. I think the bangs and the cheese. They say it ain't true. Come on, bitch, I know. You're getting wild off a pill. Say it ain't true.
What's up? What's up? What's up? What's up? What's up? What's up?
And I say it ain't true.
What's up? What's up? What's up?
What's up? Yeah.
What's up? What's up?
What's up? What's up? Say it ain't true.
Hell, y'all, we ain't say it ain't true. You in the game and you want your cash lonely like Luke. Undeterred proof, Cap City proof, Sacramento killer in the booth, rack break a roof. Yes, style all pay me and my niggas just like me. Fresh pair of forces or a Air Max Nike.
You said they just like you?
Yeah, they grind like me. Going stone for Bentleys and Brightlands. I don't know why, but all these hoes like me.
Who you think they like you?
I said I know they like me. I'm dipping up fast, leaving slow with your wife. Is your remix me? Screw me up and choke. Then I'm back doing magic with the white light tower. Turning snow into paper. Ben Frankers on the hour. Burning up sour. Make them feel what I do. Cause it's finna be my turn. Haters say it ain't true. Let's stop.
Come on, nigga. Ain't no need. I think the bangs and the cheese. They say it ain't true. Come on, bitch. I know the deal. You're getting wild off a beer. Say it ain't true.
Oh, yeah, more great music from John Doe Radio. Check out johndoeradio.com for more, especially if you're in the Mountain Time Zone, Denver, Colorado area.
It's 420 somewhere.
All right, it's time to check our cannabis community calendar, which you can find at norml.org/calendar. Tonight, there's an event in Hollywood, Florida, with Normal of South Florida and People United for Medical Marijuana. Call Karen at 954-303-9254. That's 954-303-9254 if you'd like
information on this event in Hollywood, Florida. University of New Hampshire Normal will be having their meeting tonight at the MUB 334. Tomorrow, Friday, March 26th, there's an MMTF meeting at the City Council Committee Room in San Diego, California. Check out Normal SC for details. This weekend, Saturday, March 27th, the Oregon Normal Cardholder Meeting will be streamed live here on Normal Show Live Stick'em Stream, as well as happening at the 700 Northeast Deacom, the Village Ballroom in Portland, Oregon. It's the largest normal meeting on the planet, and you can watch it live through live.normal.org. Oregon Normal members who are members of the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program will meet to gather and learn about the OCTA, to also exchange plants and medicine absolutely free. So check that out. The website is ornorml.org. Also on Saturday, KC Normal, Kansas City Normal, will be having their public meeting. You can call 888-KC-NORMAL or visit kcnormal.org for more information. And Ken Gorman's Marijuana Legalization Memorial Rally will be happening at the Colorado State Capitol Building between Colfax and Broadway. This is also on Saturday, March 27th. Check out milehighnormal.org for more details. And Oregon Normal will be having a general membership meeting also on Saturday after the cardholders meeting. This will be at the Good Neighbor Pizzeria at 800 Northeast Deacom, just a block away from the cardholder meeting. This is for folks who aren't medical marijuana patients, so if you'd like to get involved with the Oregon Cannabis Tax Act, which we'll be talking about with Madeline Martinez here in about 15 minutes, you can make it to that meeting on Saturday, Good Neighbor Pizzeria, Portland, Oregon.
Hello, I'm Casper Leach, host of Time for Hemp. Did you know that police arrested a record 829,625 people in the United States for marijuana violations in 2006? Marijuana arrests now comprise nearly 44% of all drug arrests in the United States. Of those charged with marijuana violations, approximately 89% were charged with possession only. The total number of marijuana arrests in the United States for 2006 far exceeded the total number of arrests for all violent crimes combined. Enforcing marijuana prohibition costs taxpayers between $10 and $12 billion annually and has led to the arrest of nearly 20 million Americans. We must end this war on drugs. With your help, we can. Please join LEAP, the Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, and become part of the solution to ending this civil war. You can do so by going to leap.cc.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527. One of the most disturbing elements of the war on marijuana is how it has made police the enemy of otherwise law-abiding cannabis consumers. Fortunately, one group of police officers knows firsthand the futility of the drug war and reaches out to the community and to current law enforcement to end our war on drugs through legalization. It's time now to speak to one such officer in our continuing look at law enforcement against prohibition.
That's right. On the second and fourth Thursdays of the month, we visit with speakers from law enforcement against prohibition. And joining us today is Peter Crist. Peter, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me, Russ. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, we're glad to have you here. I'm reading your bio here. It says you retired as a police captain after 20 years of enforcing the drug laws and that you believe the war on drugs is a misnomer. Explain that.
Well, they had to come up with a name for it back in the Nixon administration. They came up with war on drugs. I kind of wish they would have called it what it really is, and that is the new prohibition, because then at least the public would have realized what a stupid idea it was to begin with. We are involved in another period of prohibition in America, and it's working just as well as the one on alcohol did between 1920 and 1933, and it's never going to accomplish what we want. We have continued this war because we've created what I call the drug monolith. If you hear about a drug overdose someplace, you correctly say that's part of the drug problem in America.
Right.
And then you hear about a drive-by shooting someplace, and it's reported as a drug-related shooting, or that violence on the Mexican border, which we're told over and over again is drug-related violence. In reality, these are two profoundly separate problems. The drug problem, the use and abuse of some of these very dangerous drugs, is in fact an educational and a health care problem. The drug violence, the shootings, the violence on the Mexican border, that's not the drug problem, that's the drug policy problem. That's because we are choosing in this country, again, a policy of prohibition, which creates an underground violent marketplace, because these people are not fighting and shooting each other because they're high. They're fighting and shooting each other because they're fighting for control of a multi-billion dollar industry. And we need to take it out of the hands of the gangsters and thugs, turn it over to some form of a licensed, regulated marketplace, and then deal with our drug problem in America.
It's always been ironic to me that so many of the harms people will attribute to drugs are actually, as you said, the harms that should be more properly attributed to prohibition. And these types of views of yours, you've had these for a long time, like we said, after 20 years of enforcing drug laws. And going back to the late 80s and early 90s, you were one of the pioneers in beginning this discussion to end the war on drugs. Tell us about your background, you know, helping to form first Reconsider, and then your ideas that led to LEAP.
Okay. Well, I am the best definition of me is a hypocrite. I came to my conclusion about this drug policy when I was about 20, 21 years old, after a lot of reading about alcohol prohibition and finally coming to an understanding on why it didn't work. And it wasn't, as my mother put it, because the people didn't support it, because we passed a constitutional amendment to enact alcohol. We amended the fundamental document of our country to enact alcohol prohibition, and that takes a lot of support to do that. In fact, my father was more correct. When I would ask him why it didn't work, he would say because it was a stupid idea. And that really is what it came down to when I was about 20, 21 years old. Then at 22 years old, I got on the police department. So I put all my old thinking on the back burner. That was all theory. I was now in the business of enforcing these laws, and I felt that I had an obligation to give it a fair shake. And by the time I was on the job about 4 years, it became very clear to me that there was only one aspect of my law enforcement career that made absolutely no difference whether I did it or not in the community I worked in, and that was drug enforcement. For example, we would have a series of burglaries in my township, and then one of our officers would arrest a burglar, and what we would see would be a cessation of burglaries for a while. Or we would have assaults, same thing. We would have robberies, same thing. We made a difference when we went out and arrested. We made drug arrests, and nothing ever changed. Mm-hmm. The availability of drugs stayed the same. The drugs were just as prevalent. The only difference was we destroyed a couple people's lives in the process. In 1989, I retired, and I said I'm going to dedicate the rest of my life to this policy. The first meeting I went to, a national meeting, was in October of 1989. I went to the Normal Conference that they held down in Washington, D.C., and I went to that not because marijuana was particularly my issue, but because I thought I would get to meet some people that were involved in drug policy reform. At that conference, I met people that came from a group that had a meeting the week before a conference, and that was called Drug Policy Foundation, now known as Drug Policy Alliance, DPA. And those people were talking about what I was talking about. So I came back up to Syracuse, wrote letters to the editor, called talk shows. I got a guy by the name of Nick Eiley got a hold of me and said they were forming a group and they were going to call it Reconsider on Forum on Drug Policy and asked me if I wanted to be part of it. And I met with them and decided to, and I became their primary spokesperson. And we went to the conferences every year. And in fact, by the mid-90s, I was being told, and you probably remember this period, don't use the L word.
Right.
Don't talk about legalization. You know, shut up. Don't say that. And Nick and I would drive back from the conferences back up to Syracuse, and one of us, by the time we hit the Pennsylvania border, would look at the other one and say, well, they just don't get it yet. I guess we just have to keep doing what we're doing. Mm. I had the idea for LEAP in the mid-90s because I knew there was a lot of other law enforcement officers out there that felt the same way I did and that an organization of them might have some impact. I would mention that idea to people, and they would say, gee, it's a good idea. You ought to do that. And my answer was always the same. I'll work with it, but I don't want to run it. I have no interest in running an organization. In 1999, I met a guy by the name of Jack Cole, retired New Jersey State Trooper. He became a spokesperson for LEAP, and we worked together for Reconsider, and we worked together at Reconsider. Then in late 2001, MPP, Marijuana Policy Project, threw a $50,000 grant out on the table for anybody that wanted to start a law enforcement group. Jack called me up and said, do you want to do this? And I said, I ain't going to run it. He said, well, I'll do that. And Jack Cole turned my idea into a reality. He is the one that did all the hard work, made this organization, took it from an idea and made it into a reality. And over the last 8 years, built LEAP into an organization that I think is finally starting to be heard, not just in the drug policy reform movement, but across the nation as a whole.
Oh, it's a fantastic organization. We love having your speakers on, you know, twice a month here on our show. I wanted to get to some ideas here, some concepts that maybe you've dealt with in speaking to audiences all around the country. Of course, here on our show, it's kind of, you know, a little bit of the choir here, right, that we're preaching to. But you
You got to speak to the choir every once in a while so they know the words to the music.
That's a good point. That's a good point. But in speaking to the audiences around the country, and oftentimes we deal with parents that are frightened about the possibility that their kids might get involved with drugs, and we often get what I call the "what about the children" argument, which is, if the drugs aren't illegal, how do we convince the kids not to use them? Or if we make them legal, are we not encouraging them to use drugs? How do you respond to that when you're out on the road?
Well, the way I get that question is with the word condoning.
Yeah.
You know, if we legalize these drugs, we're condoning them. What kind of a message, like you said, does this send to the children and so on and so forth? And I like to use myself as an example. And what I do is I tell the audience the truth, and that is that I have been a cigarette smoker for 40 years in this wonderful country of America. I can remember when I was absolutely and completely condoned as a cigarette smoker. I never walked into a building and asked if I could smoke in that building. All I asked for was an ashtray. I could get on an aeroplane in Los Angeles and sit in the smoking section and fly all the way to New York City. Not a problem. I never had to check a hotel for a smoking room because all the rooms in every hotel were smoking rooms. I was thoroughly condoned. I no longer feel condoned as a cigarette smoker in America. I now feel barely tolerated by the rest of society. Now, my drug, tobacco, is perfectly legal, sold everywhere. I can buy it anytime I want to, but I am not condoned in that use. And I use that as an example to show how just because something is legal doesn't mean we condone it. And when it comes to what you started the question with is, well, if we legalize drugs, how do we keep them out of the hands of children? Well, let me tell you something. Almost every survey I've seen of high school students, when they're asked the question, what's easier to get, tobacco, alcohol, or marijuana, they always put marijuana down on the list as the easiest thing to get. And the reason is, under the current stupid policy, you do not have to deal with a licensed distributor who is worried about losing their job and their career if they sell to a minor. You're dealing with criminals who don't give a damn. And in fact, not only in this policy do we have children having easy access to drugs, but also we now have children, because of the money involved, marketing and selling drugs to other children in our communities. Those days have to come to an end. I am not pro-drug use. We at LEAP are not pro-drug use. We believe that a drug-free society is a wonderful dream. It's just not possible. And I always like to add, every time I use the word drug-free, to all the people that have voted for politicians that have said that they're going to give them a drug-free community or a drug-free city or a drug-free nation, let's remember that in the United States of America, where we have the largest prison population in the world, we do not have one drug-free prison. Not one.
Absolutely.
And if we can't keep drugs out of prison, who is going to be delusional enough to think we can keep them out of a free and open society? It just doesn't work that way. But people keep buying the myth.
Yeah, absolutely. And one quick thing here as we wrap up with Peter Crist here from Leap. I love your comparison to tobacco smoking and how free and open tobacco smoking used to be when I was a kid growing up in the 70s. I remember, you know, smoking in movies, smoking on TV shows everywhere. Everybody was smoking. I think that's one of the things sometimes people fear about possibly legalization of marijuana is that the tobacco companies would get a hold of it and advertise it and make it popular and glamorous like they did with cigarettes at one time. So as you support this idea of legalization of drugs to end the harms of prohibition, what sort of restrictions, like perhaps restricting advertising, would you support on the legalization of drugs to keep it from being condoned, as you said?
Right. Well, one thing I want to add, by the way, just in case there's a misconception here. When I talked about my past cigarette use and so on and so forth, and my current cigarette use, I think the way it is now is the way it should have always been, all right? So I'm not complaining that I'm not condoned anymore.
Right.
I think if I decide to smoke, then I have to make arrangements in my life to smoke. Nobody else has to make arrangements for me so that I can smoke. So I just want to clear that up.
Right.
But, yes, we do that all the time. We learned with advertising. We took the advertising off of television for tobacco. All these lessons that we learned throughout the years with tobacco, we should put these into effect immediately. You know, in 1933, we did two things. One was brilliant. We ended alcohol prohibition. The other one was profoundly stupid. And that was we embarked on almost a 50-year journey of pretending we didn't have an alcohol problem. It wasn't until the late 70s, early 80s, Mothers Against Drunk Driving came along and made us start dealing with our alcohol problem. I don't want to see us go on that journey with these other drugs. I think we learned our lesson there, and we have to put the regulations into effect, whatever they are, immediately upon legalization, and then we have to start the education process and so on and so forth. We at LEAP, as an organization, have no position on what the regulatory marketplace should look like. Whether we have private enterprise regulated, whether we have the government regulated, that's for other people outside law enforcement to decide. All we know at LEAP is that this is a job that law enforcement has been handed, and it isn't our job. Our job in law enforcement is to protect people from each other, not from themselves. That's a function of family, church, education, and the healthcare system, not the criminal justice system. And one quick plug. Cops Say Legalize Drugs or leap.cc will take them to our website. And we are two things. We're 501c3, which means any donation made to us is tax deductible. And two, we are a membership organization. And anybody who wishes to join can sign up at the website. And it costs nothing to join. And what you're basically doing is putting your name on our mailing list so that our numbers grow and more people listen to us.
All right. That sounds fantastic. Leap.cc or copsaylegalizeddrugs.com. Peter Crist, a former 20-year police captain, now speaker with Leap. Thanks so much for joining us and give us your perspective on this war on drugs. We appreciate it.
Thanks for sharing your audience with me, Russ.
All right. We're right back with Madeline Martinez after these messages. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Hello, this is Webb Hubble. Life insurance is now available for responsible marijuana smokers. For years, responsible marijuana smokers have not been able to access affordable life insurance products. Normal uniquely supports cannabis consumers. Two carriers have already agreed to offer all of their traditional life insurance products at all levels without excluding individuals who smoke marijuana responsibly. Help Normal and help yourself. If you've been declined for life insurance, are paying above market premiums, or simply want to know what now may be available in the way of insurance for marijuana smokers, contact me at info@mclaughlinonline.com. or simply call me at 202-293-5566.
Hey everybody, it's your favorite giveaway guy, Gene Blinkendale, here with a fabulous new contest for all you tokers and tokettes out there.
We've got four t-shirts from homegrown.com to give away to the first four listeners who send us an email. But wait, it's not that easy. Your email needs to contain three different responses from your state or federal elected officials on the subject of marijuana law reform, all dated after March 1st, 2010. Send in your three responses in an email to stash@normal.org with the subject line Homegrown T-Shirt Contest, and you could be a winner. By writing your elected officials, someday we all could be winners. I'm your giveaway guy, Gene Blinkendale, reminding you that there ain't no such thing as a free lunch, but a friend with weed is a friend indeed.
The effects of marijuana prohibition are felt by all Americans in every walk of life, regardless of race, creed, color, religion, party politics, social status, wealth, gender, sexual orientation, or even one's use or non-use of marijuana. As the Marijuana Smokers Lobby, Normal hears the stories of these average Americans and brings them to the attention of our policymakers and our fellow citizens in this segment we call Normal Newsmakers.
All right, it's 49 after the hour, and joining us here in the studio is a Normal board member, Oregon Normal executive director, and head chief cook and bottle washer at the Cannabis Cafe. How many hats you got? Madeline Martinez is here.
Thank you so much, Russ. I'm so excited to be here, and I have breaking news.
Oh, yes. We brought you here because we got important news about legalization in the state of Oregon, so let everyone know what the latest is.
Well, the Oregon Cannabis Tax Act was being challenged by one of our fellow citizens here because they didn't care for the fact that the Attorney General would have to defend our law if it had to go to that, you know, if the feds came in and intruded or tried to enjoin it. My thought was pretty frivolous, you know.
Yeah.
And isn't that what the Attorney General does after all?
Right, defend the law.
That's his job.
Yeah.
And so anyway, as we all suspected, it was dismissed without merit.
Oh, good.
By the Oregon Supreme Court. So we're thrilled. We just heard today, and we will be petitioning, I would say probably in the next 7 days, we'll have petitions out for everyone. So if you're an Oregonian, please get involved. We would like to tax and regulate cannabis. We want to legalize industrial hemp and allow adults to purchase cannabis from a cannabis store. And we'd like the state to regulate it through the Oregon Cannabis Control Commission. So I'm really excited. I don't even know what to say.
Oh, yeah.
I'm giddy. We've got John Trudell coming into town. He's going to be doing a six-week tour. We start at the Roseland. So we'll get the information all up on your website, ours. And, you know, I just left the Cannabis Cafe, and everybody's just in high spirits.
Oh, yes.
Yes, yes.
Perfect way to put it. Now,
yes.
How many signatures are needed to be gathered to get OCTA on the ballot?
Well, it's 82,769. So we're going to have to go out and collect about 120,000 just to give us a nice buffer. We are going to have paid petition gatherers. Right now, but we are also asking people, if you care about freedom, if you care about Oregon's economy, we could create so many green jobs if we would just get our own growers. We have fabulous growers in the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program, you know. Stay tuned for the Oregon Medical Cannabis Awards. But we do, and these people can get to work doing what they love to do, growing cannabis for the state of Oregon. Isn't it a fabulous thought? I just don't even know what to say. I think that we've tried the marijuana reform laws that exist. They're not working.
Yeah.
It's a dismal failure. The black market is reaping all the rewards of selling marijuana. And I think it's really high time for the state government to realize, as they did with the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program, that they're already partners in marijuana money as revenue, because they took over $900,000 in 2007, as you well know. So we're just trying to point out to them that there are over 357,000 1,000 cannabis consumers in the state of Oregon. And if you're looking at for revenue, here it is.
Right.
We want to raise our hand and say, please tax us today. We want to be taxed. We want to pay our fair share. And the most exciting part is that we could actually fund health care. You know, I like to call it Canicare.
Yeah, you know?
Wouldn't it be great?
It would be fantastic. Now, as we talk about, you know, taxation and regulation, there's a segment of our audience, of the population, that are nervous about that. And they're like, oh, I don't want anybody taxing me. I don't want to be on a government list. So how does Okta affect a guy who just wants to grow a few pot plants in his closet? He doesn't want to sell. He just wants to grow his own and maybe give a little to his friends.
Well, Okta allows for personal cultivation for personal use. You don't want to sell it, because if you get caught selling it, the same laws remain in place.
Okay.
You still have to go through the feds and they will take care of it. But in the state of Oregon, it would be fine for a private citizen to grow their own little pot plant and use it for themselves or share it with their neighbors and friends.
Does Okta contain a presumptive limit on possession or number of plants that says below this it's personal, above this it's a commercial?
Well, I'm sure there will be amounts put in place. But right now what we're doing is we want to pass the law, and I'm not sure if you're familiar, but as with the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act, we passed it and then we went and sat down and did administrative rules, which is to give some guidelines to the law. And what I would presume, I've been working in the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program for a number of years, I would think that we would take those guidelines, 24 ounces, into account because it's worked. Mm-hmm. You know, since we passed it, and maybe the number of 6 plants, or maybe enhanced that a little bit, and then anything over that would be for production and have to be licensed through the state of Oregon.
Okay. Then there's also the contingent of folks in Oregon who are already protected by OMA, the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act, and like you said, they got a 24-ounce limit, 24 plants. Would Okta affect that at all? I mean, would that change their limits in any way?
Not at all. It would not. Okta would even tack the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act as it stands when it's passed, and allow any amendments to it or rule change. But moreover, it would leave DUI laws in place as well, because I know a lot of people are concerned about, sure, you know, smoking and driving. So that's not anything we would promote, mm-hmm, or even consider changing right now.
Okay. You mentioned also industrial hemp as part of OCTA, Oregon Cannabis Tax Act. Recently, the Oregon legislature passed industrial hemp as a law in the state. It's one of, I believe, 8 or 9 states that now have that. How would this be different? How would Okta be different than passing the hemp law that they passed last year?
Well, it would be different in that it would allow for a higher THC amount in the plant, which would allow for more seeds. Hmm. And the seeds are what we need to create hemp fuel. And then the residue from those seeds, pause for the cause.
Yeah, happens all the time. And you just came from the Cannabis Cafe, so we perfectly understand.
A little dry mouth.
A little bit.
And what I'm excited about is the fact that once you press those seeds and you get all that fuel out of it, biofuel, you would be able to then use the flower, which is the residue from that, and rich in omega-3s, 6s and 9s, and feed Oregonians who are hungry right now. You know, our motto here is with the food bank, no Oregonian should go hungry. You know, no kid should go to bed hungry. And here we have all the ability to sustain ourselves in our state. What a concept. And not to mention that we can use industrial hemp fibers to make board, the stalks to make board, rich board that insulates very nicely, as well as we can use it to export. Imagine exporting it rather than importing it, which we're doing right now from China, and we're increasing their economy.
Yeah. Maybe if we get industrial hemp legalized, they can grow it here in Oregon, and I can get another hemp hat.
Yay.
They won't make them anymore from the New York Hat Company because the hemp's too expensive to import. It's just ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. It's and the fact that let's all think about this. America's financial foundation was hemp. Mm-hmm. Our country was founded on hemp. Each farmer was required to grow an acre of hemp just to keep us going. Hemp for Victory, remember
that
one.
That's right.
And so I think it's really important for us to go back to those roots. America's roots are hemp roots.
Yeah.
And cannabis, what can I say? It's the best medicine ever.
Right on. Well, we love what you're doing. Everybody check out octa2010.org. That's where you can get your information on the Oregon Cannabis Tax Act. For the Cannabis Cafe, check out usacannabiscafe.org. And for Oregon Normal, ornorml.org. And speaking of the cafe, folks want those hoodies. When are they going to be able to get them online?
Well, actually, Chris out there, Papa Bear, is working on it right now. We're getting a little shopping cart going for everybody. We've got some excellent, we call them medical jars for our medicine that are going to be available, as well as t-shirts, hoodies. We're going to have so many things that will be available, ashtrays. I'm really excited about it.
Check it all out, usacannabiscafe.org. And for everyone here, Madeline Martinez, Ganja John, Cannabis Carrie, and myself, thanks for listening to Normal Show Live today. Replays coming up at 3, 5, 7, and 9, just in case you missed anything. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
Legalize!
Coming up on tomorrow's show, we will be visiting with director Tim Blake Nelson with the new movie Leaves of Grass, starring Edward Norton. Check it out tomorrow on Normal Show Live.
We love the earth.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Take it on one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. Take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down.